Remember the feeling of rushing home from school, tossing your backpack on the floor, and turning on the TV just in time for the afternoon block of cartoons? Way back when life was all about schoolyard rivalries and making it home before the streetlights came on? Well, what if those Saturday morning vibes collided with an action-packed sci-fi adventure? In the new comic, The Ruth Avenue Raiders, the best, and let's be honest, the cockiest elementary school football team on Ruth Ave is about to face a defensive line unlike anything they've ever seen. We're talking interdimensional robots from Sector 7. When these kids are challenged to a match where the stakes are way higher than just bragging rights, they realize their old playbook won't save them. It's a hilarious, action-packed story about friendship, teamwork, and learning to step out of your comfort zone, all before the sun goes down. If you know a young reader looking for a new graphic novel, or if you grew up on the heart of Hey Arnold, the playground politics of Recess, or the what-could-go-wrong energy of Dexter's Lab, this is the book you've been waiting for. It's The Sandlot Meets Transformers, created by Mad Cave Studios Talent Search winner Damian Becton and artist Marina Otegua Ruiz. The Ruth Avenue Raiders is now live on Kickstarter, and you do not want to miss the kickoff. Head over to www.ruthavenueraiders.com right now to secure your copy of The Ruth Avenue Raiders, only available until June 24th. By joining the squad early, you'll stay in the loop and get access to exclusive early bird rewards and updates that won't be available anywhere else. That's www.ruthavenueraiders.com. Help us bring this 90s-inspired adventure to life. Winner go Chrome.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Alex in partnership with CoverPrice.com, the ultimate comic book resource, highlighting a book from CoverPrice's weekly top 10 report for the week ending June 15th. These are the comics collectors chased the hardest last week, driving demand and pushing prices across the aftermarket. This week's highlight, Avengers Armageddon number 1, which came bagged with an already existing but still pretty neat Magic the Gathering Warstorm Surge card. While it's extremely difficult to play Magic the Gathering with one card, the Ryan Stegman cover for the kickoff of the event, which features Wolverine and Iron Man trying to restrain the Red Hulk from probably smushing Spider-Man into bug guts, has hit $24 for a near-mint copy. Hey, that could buy you a whole deck of Magic cards. That's easier to play. That was a highlight from CoverPrice's weekly top 10 report. Want to learn what your collection is worth right now? CoverPrice.com does all the hard work for you, tracking aftermarket sales for both raw and slab comics. CoverPrice.com lets you know what your comics are actually selling for. Interested in weekly new releases, FOCs, trending comic lists, and a ton of other great content? CoverPrice has you covered. Visit CoverPrice.com/comicbookclub today to get 1 month of CoverPrice for just $1. That's CoverPrice.com/comicbookclub. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on LinkedIn, of course, for all your jobbing needs.
That's where we start. That's where we got our start.
Yes, we did. That's where we met up, through a LinkedIn chat. That is not true. YouTube, Twitch, Kick, maybe some other places. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, etc. If so, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do at patreon.com/comicbookclub. And folks, we've got a great show for you this evening. I'm very excited about our guest. He is an absolute legend. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff, including the latest reboot, reinvention of Spawn that's been going on, among other things. Ladies and gentlemen, Todd McFarlane. Todd, welcome to the podcast.
What are you big boys doing today?
we're being grown-ups. We're acting like grown-ups.
Can't you tell by my toys behind me? I'm a big boy. Yes.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Yeah, for sure. Big fans, of course. Before we get to the Spawn, this is a general question, and I'm sure you get this a lot, but you've been in the comic industry for a very long time at this point. What keeps you coming back? What is the thing that keeps drawing you back to comics specifically?
I don't know. I mean, in its simplest form, it's a medium that allows you to create. And for whatever reason, we have personalities and we get wired. And I guess I was just wired to like to be competitive, play sports, and draw things and create things. I don't remember a day when I didn't have all of that. So it's just It's just who I am, right? I mean, I'm sure other people, when I talk to them about what I do, I bore them. they maybe do something that I'm not interested in. So it's actually good that we actually both fall into the ones that we're excited about. So I don't know. When you just have it in you, it's easy. It's not a chore. It's not work, right? I've been with my wife for almost 50 years, and it's like loving her is as easy as breathing. And that's 50 years. So I hope I get another 50. I hope I get another 50 years of drawing. Like there's no effort. There's no effort. For the people that it's an effort, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Does your wife love comics as much as you do?
No, she she's one of those practical spouses that's like, you go do your thing. I'll be here. I'll support it. But she doesn't geek out. She's not a geek.
Obviously, you've got your own things going, which, again, we'll talk about in a moment. But how is your feeling about the comic book industry right now? Like, what in particular gets you inspired? Are there books you're reading or looking at, or artists or writers in particular that you think are just like getting you fired up about continuing in this?
Not really. My time in the industry is sort of looking at it from a holistic point of view, right? I have lots of conversation with some of my peers about the details. Maybe we'll even have some of them. But what matters sort of most to me is really only two things. One, the things I can control, right? So I go, hey, these are my books. This is the people I choose to hire. This is the quality that we're going to put out, and we cross our fingers and hope you got enough people that will support it. Beyond what you can control, then the next one is, what's the health of the industry as a whole? And the reason that that's important is because it doesn't matter what I'm doing individually at any time in my 40 years. It never has mattered if the big boat that we want to call comic book industry, if it wants to sail fast, it's gonna, and I get to go with it. And if it wants to take on water and begin to sink, then I sort of go down with it. So especially when I was doing only one book, like I'm going, I don't have much impact here. So if the industry wants to commit, you know, self-inflicted suicide, I can't do anything to stop that. And still, even with the number of books that we do, Image, given that I'm president of Image Comics, we have a sort of a bigger impact than an individual like myself or Robert Kirkman. But I just like to watch a little bit and just make sure that we're doing okay and we're not doing too much dumb stuff, right? Because we need the loyalty of the readers. You need the loyalty of your viewers. And if at any time they believe they're being taken advantage, they'll just go someplace else where they can enjoy their time and effort and their money. So,
but it feels like Image, for all of the years you've been there, like it's expanded and shifted. It's become this creative engine for so much of the industry. When it started as something, you were sort of escaping a certain part of the industry and creating your own island. But now that island feels like it still has that philosophy, but it's gotten so much bigger and pushed in different directions.
Yeah, I would say it's been like that for quite some time, right? And my epiphany came, and I don't even know what the year was, but we did an Image convention or Image Expo or something like that. I think it was in Oakland. And it was just all things Image. The whole show was all things Image. And I remember walking around that show. And that was a long time. That seemed like at least around 10 years ago. I was going, man, I could get hit by a bus. And so could every founder, the original founders, get hit by a bus. And Image is going to be healthy as heck. Because everything I saw was all the new energy and the new creators and the new books. And I could see the fans were coming and they were like, so excited about those other books and couldn't give two cents about like what I was doing in my corner. I took that as a sense of pride that means that Image is going to survive, and it's going to survive for a long time, even long past the lives, hopefully, fingers crossed, of all of the original founders. Well, I mean, that should be sort of the goal for any creator of anything, is to create something and it outlives you, right? Not, I mean, on a day-to-day basis, that's your children. You never wish upon anybody to see their children pass away before them, right? And I have a handful that have, and it's just gut-wrenching. What you want is to put something into the world, especially creatively, and then hope that it prospers. And even though people be sad when you die, their next question is going to be, so when's the next issue or next movie or next video game of that character coming up? That means they still want what you gave them, and that's the victory. So that image will outlast my life, I'm hoping, I'll go out with a smile. So. Mm.
Do you feel that way about, is that Spawn as well? Yeah, like, sure, is that sure. The thing that you're like really trying to push that out
was,
there?
Are there it was, other I'm things? Telling you, I'm telling you, Alex, it was one of the goals I had from day one. Can I plant a flag of a character? I didn't know it was going to be Spawn. If it didn't work, I would have to come up with something else. But can I create something that will outlive me? Because yeah, like when I was younger and I was born in the 60s, like, you know, Walt Disney was the guy that I just go, oh man, look at all those characters he helped create. And then at some point, Walt wasn't here, but Mickey Mouse, not only did Mickey Mouse and Goofy and Pluto continue, but Walt Disney, the company as a whole, grew even bigger, so that we had things like Toy Story and Pixar comes along, and now they acquire Marvel, and it's gotten bigger, right? Stan Lee, again, I would put him in the same box as Walt Disney, of a single person who created a massive amount of intellectual properties that are, I mean, that's the steepest hill you can get. We can all catch lightning in a bottle once, maybe twice if we're really lucky. But to do it 8, 9, 10 times, like Walt Disney and Stan Lee did with the people that they helped, that helped them co-create all those characters, man, that like, wow. So, but you can, I've also said to people, somebody walks up to you and says, hey, here, Justin, here's the copyright trademark for Superman. Here's my advice to you. Take it and fucking get out of that room as fast as you can before they change. Don't ask about Superboy. Don't ask about crypto. Don't ask about Supergirl. Yeah. Run, because that's with funny. That one main character, you can then go, I can build another universe away from all those other characters, because I've got the centerpiece of it. So I've got a foundation to go with it. So I guess you could say that's way closer to what I've done with Spawn.
First of all, it's very funny, though I think you're 100% right to think about Spawn as your Mickey Mouse, because they're wildly different characters. But again, I
say that only in that Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Again, not let's just distill it. Mickey Mouse outlived, the idea of Mickey Mouse outlived its creator. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hoping for is that when I die, people will still enjoy Spawn and will want more Spawn. That's the victory for me. That was my goal.
Yeah. Well, what is it then? Obviously, we have our opinions from our reader perspective, but from your perspective, what is it about Spawn that hit? Why is that the thing that stuck?
Let me just sort of digress a little bit and tell you like why me, because people go, Todd, you've been doing for 30, 35 years. Like, what keeps you going? Like, here's the simple thing. I need my Spawn comic book in my life creatively. Right. And the reason is because I do enough things in other places of my life, and especially on the toy side with McFarlane Toys, where we go out and get other people's brands. And we have to get permission, and we have to get approvals, and we have to get sign-offs, right? And during those processes, and I've been doing it for, you know, over 30 years on the toy side, It can be somewhat aggravating. So I'll write my memoir someday. But no matter what's going on in my life, I have this glowing light in the corner for me personally, and it's my Spawn book, because get up tomorrow, come up with an idea, and just implement it. And I don't need anybody's approval. I'm not saying it's great. I'm not saying what I'm doing is better than anybody else. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying for me personally, I get to create and not have to get turn around and get a sign off. And that's why I need this book. Like, I remember Robert Kirkman, I was talking to him when he was quitting Walking Dead, and he was up to about 190 and he was talking about quitting. And I go, come on, man, you should go up to 200, right? Come on, man, go to 200. And he's like, Todd, I wanted to quit at like 130. So he goes up, he goes, if I've got to go. And at this point I was nearing, or we had just passed or whatever, issue 300 of Spawn and set the record. And I never forget him saying, Todd, if I got to do another 100 issue Walking Dead, I'll put a nail on my head. Right. So again, at some point, every creator has a length of time, and then they just have other ideas that they want to go manifest. Or again, your kid's grown up and it's time to send them to college and then go raise another child. But for me, 300, and now we're pushing close to, it'd be less than 2 years before we get to 400. Okay. But again, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it all. Let's just be clear. I'm not writing pencil and ink in every single page like Eric Larson is on Dragon. So I understand that the only way to get to 400 issues is by getting help from other smart people. If it was me completely having to do all of it, you know what? Probably I would have burnt out maybe, you know, in 120 issues myself.
So. It's interesting you're talking about timelessness, because it sounds to me that like Spawn keeps you personally timeless. It keeps, that's a little pocket that you get to keep being in.
It keeps my joy of the industry, because I have my little warm blanket that I get to wrap myself around and enjoy it. And again, I kudos to everybody who has any success with characters that they don't own, because I did it, you know, when I was on Spider-Man, a little bit on Hulk and stuff like that. And it's a good ride. It's a good ride. But having been on both rides, I for me personally, I think Robert Kirkman would tell you the same. The ride that you're the pilot, not the co-pilot, is a way more enjoyable run, because you can just come up with like big thoughts about anything, whether it's comic books, TV, movies, video games, versions of it. People come knocking on your door. You have lots of conversation. They have to come to you, right? I was saying to somebody the other day, I had this conversation with Donny Cates one day, and Donny Cates had phoned me because he was, I think, doing his 50th issue of Venom, and he wanted me to do a cover. And I go, no, I'm not going to do a cover. I'm president of Image. I can't do that. But he's like, oh, come on, Todd. But we got into the conversation where I was just going, it's weird that you've done 50 issues of Venom, but you haven't done 50 issues of any book that you own, right? Mm. Even 25, like let's cut it in half, even 25. And I go, here's the thing. It's really a nice accomplishment. And I tip my hat to you or any other creator, right? You did 50 issues of the book, right? But I go, you walk into a Hollywood meeting tomorrow, and I walk in with you, and you say to that executive, hey, I did 50 issues of Venom. And I say, I co-created Venom. Matter of fact, the look of Venom, I create it. Who do you think gets more attention? And here's the sad fact. Neither of us. And the reason is because the executive is going to go, oh, so you guys are here to sell me Venom. No.
Right.
So you wrote the most issues and you created the most issues, or you created the character, like, okay, but neither one of you have anything to offer me today. Why are you in my office? What, come back when you've got something that you can offer me other than bragging rights. Right. So, that's it. I like to be in rooms where I can offer something to somebody potentially. And it's viable. And because right now somebody wants to go make a hat or t-shirt or video game or anything from any character I'm doing or Robert Kirkman or anybody that's got a book of them, they got to go to the creator, yeah. Right? Anybody wants to make a hat, t-shirt of Captain America, I don't care how many issues you've done, I don't care how many awards you've won, they got to go to Marvel, right? They don't have, you don't get the fruits of your labor, right? So, but anyways, that's my president of image speech. It's good. The grass is good on this side of the fence when it works. Why does Swan work for readers? I think on his best day, he's just a cool badass character that people just go, fuck, go get him, Swan. Go, like, go. He doesn't really have a lot of rules. I guess it would be like as creators of image, there are not really too many walls around it. I think there's a space for that because the corporate characters can only go so far, right? It's really interesting to me what's happening with some of the absolute stuff, because you're sort of going into that vein, right? That dark, yeah. Harsh, I would argue, sort of Spawnish world. But what's going to intrigue me is how does Warner Brothers, the parent company, what are they going to do with it? Because for so long, they've nurtured what Superman and Batman and Flash are to moms and eight-year-olds, that now all of a sudden they have to say, well, not really. I don't – and oh, by the way, if we go as harsh as it is in some of the comic books now, we might not sell as many toys and T-shirts and stuff. So I don't know. I would like to be a fly on the wall of those conversations to go, we've got this massive hit, but the style of it is not conducive to what we've been doing on our public front as a big giant Fortune 500 corporation. So great comic books. I don't know whether they were going to make an absolute Batman movie. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. You mentioned Eric Larson. Are you guys in a lifelong game of chicken for continuing on with your characters that you started so long ago?
No, and I'd give the crown to Eric anyway, because Eric, as you know, has done every single page of his book. I mean, I think what I've done with Spawn is potentially going to become an unbreakable record. I think what Eric Dunn is a freakishly unbreakable one. I don't think that I don't know off the top of my head. Even somebody like Jack Kirby, who maybe did 100 issues of the Fantastic Four, is still 150 issues short, right? Yeah. Dave Sim did, you know, the vast majority of the artwork and the writing on Cerebus for the 300 issues. So maybe once Eric gets past 300, then he will be the true, true, true undisputed creator, right? Not for Spawn. It was the longest running comic book, not Todd. It was the character in the book. But yeah, that dude is so dedicated that at some point I question his sanity.
This is getting back to something you said earlier in terms of bringing other people. There is a reinvention of Spawn going on right now. We had Matthew Rosenberg on the show a couple of months back, good friend of the show. Yep. And he was telling, I don't know if he was being modest, but he was saying that he got essentially a call from you that he felt like came out of nowhere. He didn't know what was going on. And then you talked to him about coming on Spawn. It went through a bunch of iterations, etc. Yep. The thing that I'm wondering about beyond that story, like, was he lying to us?
It's hard for me to hire somebody without talking to him, but okay.
Well, I guess what I'm actually curious about is, like, what puts somebody like that on your radar where you say, oh, Matthew Rosenberg or X person is good to take over Spawn?
For me, and again, it's my bias, right? So again, doesn't mean that it's right. I'm very sensitive about dialogue, and it's like when I watch TV and movies, my kids have caught me many times. Go, Dad, why are you groaning? And I don't even know I'm doing it, right? I just like, ugh. right? Like, because it's just it's what I call it's comic booky dialogue, right? And so every now and then somebody comes along and they can write what feels like real people, given, especially in comic book, given that there's a fantastic element in there that is the piece that, how do you get there? So you don't want to ignore that. You want to play up to that. But why can't you deal with it in a way that treats these people like real people, like that there's real consequences? So I've said many times, when I was growing up, I didn't go to the action movies, PG-13 action movies, the Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and Steven Seagal, those type of movies. I didn't go to any of them because I thought that it was what I called chaos with no consequence. Mm-hmm. It was just visually amazing, but there was really no consequence, right? Oh, blow up cars, flip cars, blow up buildings, crash into things and while you're trying to get away, go through intersections and hope you make it. Other cars crash into each other. And at no time in any of those movies did anybody go, hey, I wonder when I went through those four intersections and I caused five collisions, did anybody get hurt or killed because of me? When I blew up that building or whatever, and when I flipped that car, it looked super cool when it ran over the other car and then flipped. It's amazing on screen. But how do I know it didn't land on a 21-year-old woman who had a 2-year-old baby, right? Like, there's just no – and the next day, there's nobody going, looking the paper, going to the internet. Did we kill anybody? Like, it never happens. It's just like, I got away. Good on me. Who cares what the chaos is? And there's no consequences to the chaos. So every now and then somebody writes in a way that I feel like that it matters that you live on Earth with other human beings. I thought Brian Bendis, when he first came on and still to this day can do it, but I thought he was one of the best in his heyday. Like, mm-hmm. Wow. I'm going for the ride. I think these are real characters that happen to be endowed with powers. And he played a lot of it up with drama with fantasy on top of it. Anyway, it's a long way of saying I've read a few things that Matt has done that I felt the same way. That when I just read dialogue, I don't even really care what's going on. I read dialogue. When people give me movie script, some of the first things I do is I just read dialogue. I don't even care what the story is. I just want to go, are the words coming out of these people sound like fucking human beings? Right? I don't understand why that's such a difficult thing. And I ache for it. And I've been searching for it for a long time in the comic book industry. You don't have to do the glib lines, I don't think. And I keep telling my writers, if you got to do a glib line, keep it silent or write a caption. Right. But that whole, do you know who you're missing with? Right. You're going down. Do you know what kind of that's all PG-13 action movie lines. Right. I can't do it. Anyways, Matt, I thought had written a nice amount of stuff that I went, pretty solid. It feels like people. It feels like people. So that's it. So we'll see if he can bring some of that charm to the Spawn comic book.
It's interesting to hear you say these two things back to back, because talking about Spawn, people liking him because he's a cool badass, that almost feels like a Trojan horse to get what you really want, which is to connect with something more human and more real.
Well, I think you can have both. Like if you think about like Clint Eastwood in some of his Western movies, he didn't really talk a lot. Mm-hmm. He just fucking did shit, right? He just was like, I'm not a fan. I tell my writers, I go, I don't want my hero asking a bunch of questions, because at some point they should know what their goal is. I'm going to go save that girl or whatever. And everything else, to some extent, is white noise. So when the bad guy just goes, hey, I'm shooting you, you can't, why aren't you dying? Like, I don't need him to say, because I've got these ectoplasm, I'm Superman, born from the God. I don't need any of it. The answer should be, and maybe because I just project all these heroes as being me. Like, I don't give a fuck what you want, bad guy. I don't care what your wants and your needs are right now. Where's the girl? How come you won't die? Where's the girl? Hmm. And the second time you do it while you're choking them out, right? Like, I don't care what you think of me, what you're astonished at, whatever. It's irrelevant to me. Do the job. Just like I also tell my writers, like, I don't want to see any of my heroes doing this. They have been a hero for a long time, and I consider being a hero against evil as being at war. Now, if you go to a vet who's been in the war for 10 years, 20 years, fucking that fought in any real big battle, right? They don't get to a point in year five where they find the atrocities of Hitler and go, oh my God, oh my God.
Right.
Oh, they're doing experiments. The answer is, of course he's doing it. Because why? Because we know he's a cocksucker. And this is what the bad guys do. So there's no, to me, there should be no shock value. There is nothing that any one of my characters that have been around for a while should be shocked at, given that they are going up against pure evil. Nothing should shock them at this point. If anything, it should be, I'm surprised it took so long for me to come across this insanity I'm looking at right now. Right? Come on, man. Just let's go. Right? These are characters been around for a while. Just write them that way. Maybe not, you know, and I understand we all have different personality. Some people tell jokes to get past their fears. Right. Mm-hmm. So you gotta, and you don't want every character to be the same. But I don't know. I just in a movie, when the action begins, nobody talks. Right? Go watch Born Identity. Man, once they get going, there is a lot of sound effects, but there is no words. Nobody's saying something every panel. And we in comic book feel sometimes that we have to like put dialogue during that exact same scene. And it's like, why? Especially if the art is great, right?
Yeah.
I did this with one of my writers recently, and there was a shot where the artist did a great, and maybe because I'm biased, I'm an artist, and he did a great shot where the guy came behind and went, and he went like this. He was pulling his arm. You could see the drip of blood, and you could see the cut in the throat. He'd cut his throat, right? I don't know. One, I don't even need it. That drawing was so good. First of all, I don't need a caption, and I don't need a word balloon. And then I'm going, I don't need the sound effect. Like, because right. it adds a little comic booky. Looking at that drawing was harsh. It was harsh. And given that I want like R-rated drama, and I want real, then it being harsh is okay. Get out of the way. When you've got a great artist, get out of the way of the great art. Let them, like, you don't have to say anything when the panel says everything possible in a great fashion.
If you were sort of in that vein, if you were redesigning Spawn today, if you were just launching the comic and the idea is the same, but no, the empty canvas, would you draw him differently? Would you design Spawn to be different looking?
Probably. I mean, I think there are shifts in costume designs that probably happen like every 10 years and stuff, right? Mm. I mean, in my career, when the X-Men got like super famous and popular, and they were number one, all their books. I mean, rarely, if any, I'm thinking off the top of my head, any of them had any capes. Nobody had any capes. They had a bunch of like belts and pouches and things. They had straps, so they sort of kind of had their utility belt so they could do it, and then they had their power, so they were way more practical, I would say, in their costume design. And I've done it from time to time where he sort of puts his cape away, but yeah. And I don't know that I necessarily would cover him from head to toe. That was, I mean, I've told people before, look at, I created him when I was 16, right? It was in the mid 70s, and everything about him is a cliche, right? Like, he's got a cape, he's got gloves, he's got boots, he's got a full costume and he even got like a full mask. Why? Because superheroes have to have masks, and Spider-Man had a full mask on top of it. So it was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, and he's got to have him. Again, people didn't recognize it as such, but he had the mark on his chest, which was basically the bat and the S symbol, or the Green Lantern symbol or whatever it was, the spider, like the symbol on him. So all, like, I ticked off all the 8-year-old sort of things that you do when you draw a superhero. And then when 1992 came around and I dusted him off, then all the only thing I did was sort of add some of that a little bit more modern stuff, which was the spikes and the chains and a couple right. of pouch and the pouches and stuff. But essentially the goofy design I came up with, I just sort of went, I kind of like it. Let's see how it goes. So,
The stuff that Matthew Rutherford is doing, and like Erica Schultz as well, who is also great, are providing.
She's doing, and Erica, just to let the people listening, Erica took over Gunslinger from me. That's right. And so Matt was supposed to, I wanted, and again, when I phoned him, hoping he might say yes to taking over Spawn. And before he knew it, I had talked him into taking over Spawn and King Spawn. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause again, it was like, man, that sounds really great. But wouldn't it be cool if like one person was writing both books? Right. That's why I just drew a little bit of guilt and then hung up. Click.
That's funny.
Because again, then somebody's not stepping on your toes. You mm-hmm. get to basically do the whole painting yourself. So I was playing a little bit to the ego on top.
You got it.
Oh man, here we go. And he phoned back pretty quickly and went, you know, you're right. I probably should do both of those books. So, and he couldn't see me because I was on the phone, but I was like, oh, got him. But Erica is taking over Gunslinger, which is him in the modern time, where Jimmy Palmiotti is doing Gunslinger in the Western time, and he's killing it. On if you haven't read the Deadly Tales of Gunslinger book, it's one of my favorite books I published. Right, especially when Patrick Reynolds is drawing it. I mean, it's just everything I had in my mind when I close my head. I go, that's what I wanted that book to be, just gritty and dirty and ugly, right? And they're delivering on it. So and Jimmy's doing a good job.
We talked about what draws you to a writer. What about an artist? Because a lot of these books, you know, there's from a very outside perspective, you would think, oh, you want people who draw like Todd McFarlane, but there are a vast array of styles on all of these books. So what pulls you in about an art style?
Sometimes the easiest thing that pulls me in is when I'm jealous because I know I can live to be 400 years old and I'll never be able to draw like that. Right. So I don't care how long I live. I'll never be able to do what Bill Sienkiewicz does. Mm-hmm. Right. He's got something. He's wired a different way. And I'm like, oh man, I can do a poor man's version at best. But that's it. So I don't have, so I like people who have styles that are different and unique. But I also understand that because there is a superhero element, especially to some of the Spawn stuff, I need people who can do that, very well at it. What I've learned is that, and if you can see it, if you been somewhat paying attention to the 30-year span of Spawn, I write stories based on the artist's skill. Mm-hmm. Yes. So if they're really good at dark, gritty, ugly, shadowy stuff, then I bring the stories down and we make it really clandestine and they're in corners and nobody knows what's going on. And it's just like more horror and more creep. If they have like a bigger style, a grander style, I would put Steven Segovia in that, who's drawing Spawn right now. Although I'm trying to, you know, flick his ear and just go, dude, you're the most favorite color you're ever going to have in the world is black, right? Like just especially on a character like Spawn, right? He's like Batman. Like he just looks better when there's black around him. So we're Gunslinger. He can be out in the sunshine a lot more to me than Spawn. And he still kind of works. Where Spawn, I have this rule, and they don't always follow it. Spawn would never, ever, ever be disconnected from a shadow. Mm-hmm. So even if it's high noon, he would find the lamppost that's got a little bit of shadow and he would stand there. Not because he can hide, not just because that's just where he's at. And otherwise, like a vampire, he'll melt, right? Again, it's not true. He can actually stand in the sun. It's just he's way weaker in the sun. I want him to like go that my vitamin is the darkness. Why? Because at some point, as time goes by, I want the shift to have go, and it's getting there, and hopefully to get there in a grand way at some point, where Spawn was on the defense and all the shadow players and all the dark players were coming after him. And he's like, hey, man, I don't know what's going on. Leave me alone. I don't want to be a part of this. Like, you know, whatever, stop it, stop. And I wanted to get so that he actually ends up turning the tables eventually and that his reputation will precede him so that when the beast, and that's what he is to me, he's just a beast in his on his best day. When the beast walks in and you're the bad guy, you gulp because his reputation has preceded him by a lot, right? So like walking into a room and it's 5x5 and there's a hungry fucking tiger in front of you, right? That you just go, this might not end well for me. So and that Spawn, instead of being on the defensive, now says, I know the game. I am not afraid of the game. As a matter of fact, not only am I not afraid of the game, you've taken everything from me that matters. I don't even give a shit about me, which is the most dangerous man on the planet, the man on fire, right? That it's like, yeah. I'm dying anyways. What do I give a shit? But I'm going to take as many of you guys down with me as possible. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys follow sports, but like in hockey, let's just say, there's always like this enforcer guy, right? The goon, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call him. And everybody hates the goon when he plays for the other team. But when he's on your team, you love that dude.
Love the goon.
Oh, because why? He's your protector and he will do anything. He'll walk on glass to make sure that none of your teammates get the short end of a stick. And so to some, you don't have to go out with that guy. He may even actually be a little crazy. I met a couple of these athletes. And you got to have a little bit of that. But I like, to me, just like in the movie, like I think it's a victory if somebody comes out of the movie at some point and goes, wow, that Spawn is a badass. I don't know that I'd fucking want to spend a minute with that dude alone. Right? Like, I don't like it's like pulling a tiger's tail. I don't know that I'd want to do that. Like, I'm glad he's on our side and he's quote unquote the hero, but man, I don't know about that guy. That's okay. And I think that's, again, oddly part of his charm and I hope continues, because otherwise if he's just Superman and Batman, then you've got plenty of versions of those and you've got the OGs of those anyway. So
when you sit down on an empty blank page, what do you draw to like knock out the cobwebs? Like not Spawn, but like, what do you like warm up with or like at this point?
I don't do a lot of interior anymore. Right. As a matter of fact, I almost do none. So I do a lot of, sometimes I'll do like roughs for my artists when I don't think that their stuff is kind of sexy enough. Right. I'll just go, Hey, let me let me show out this page here. Cause I think you're being polite. You're being a polite artist, right? And this, and the polite artist goes like this. Oh, my hand's coming at the camera, right? No. Fuck, dude. There's what the fucking hand is. The hand is that big. Like everything is like polite, and then you go, okay. Now I'm gonna do a close up, right? I've seen it, guys. Close up here. I'm going. No, dude. This is the fucking closer. Move. My camera movement from you know, foreground, midground, background is probably a football field. Where other people, the light artists, it's like not, it's 45 feet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ugh, whatever. But if I'm just sitting around doodling and stuff like that, it's easy to just draw sort of heads and expressions and silly things, right? Yeah, I'll show you a couple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So These are the ones that I'm way too late. I got to get these out. I got to get them out hopefully tonight after the some of the sketch I'm doing for the, like I did this thing called the 50-50-50, right? Mm-hmm. And so I but then I was going, man, I'm so late on them. I better do a good job and draw. Like it can't be like a bad sketch.
Yeah, you
I go, they've been waiting so long. I better put a little bit, here's monolith. You know, like,
oh, wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Anyway, just goofy. And then even the ones with the black, again, should be sort of cool and gritty and ugly. So, yeah. Hold on. Here's another one. Everybody likes this dude. Violator. Who doesn't like the violator?
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyways, I just draw to entertain myself for the most part. But if I've got a cover that I'm doing that I'm penciling and inking, and you just come up with composition. And then other times I get the luxury of inking over other people. So
my son is 11 years old. We go to the comic book shop every week. And the other day, coincidentally, he didn't know you were coming on the show. He asked me about this Spawn character and what he's about and where he potentially should start with him. I made some suggestions. We also asked at the comic book shop, and there was a very heated debate going on. Do you ask the creator when somebody's like, where do I start with this? Do you just say, well, start with number one, or what's your suggestion?
I think there's so many issues now. It's a bit of a tough question. If you get like the first trade paperback, it gives you a bit of a primer to just go, okay, I now know what I'm sort of entering into. And then after that, there's, you know, I'm sort of proud that you can almost count on two hands the number of artists that have been on the book for 300 plus issues. At some point, I guess it would depend on what kind of stories you like to read. Like Shimon Kudransky, who did issue 201 to 250, right? He has a very realistic, cinematic, noir feel that, again, doesn't suit a lot of people who want superhero stuff. But if you like it, there's 50 issues of it. And then the follow-up of that is then, you know, I brought on like Jason Sean Alexander, who's got like this horror feel. So I was writing stories that sort of had that. When Brett Booth came on and Carlo Barbary came on, then to me, those were more sort of superhero,
right,
sort of classic look. And then Greg Capullo and his 100 issue run, almost he could just cover it all. Right. They were just like, I don't think you can go wrong. I think I'm probably biased, but I think some of the best comic book art ever put on paper was done when Greg and Danny Mickey was inking in him, in that sort of Spawn about 70 to 100, just visually black and white. It just staggeringly good to look at. So they each, as you can imagine, each one of them has a different tonality to it because of the art style. So I guess it depends what your 11-year-old kid wants. If he wants more superhero, there's pockets of that. And if he wants like kind of cool badass stuff, there's pockets of that. And then if he wants like just creepy stuff, there's pockets of that. I think it was issue 296, 297. I think I did a reader. If you buy those two issues, it's kind of a reader's digest of the first 300 issues. Like, cause I knew I was heading towards the third 300 issue and there's going to be new people coming on board. So I went, oh, let's give them a jump on point. You read these two issues, you're kind of caught up to speed, right? Yeah. Like very quickly, but you're caught up to speed. Sort of like at the beginning of a TV show where they do a recap. Yeah. So those two issues recap kind of what the overall theology and story is of Spawn. And then there was the prequel and then going into 300 and then 301. Cause I was trying to figure out to the retailers how I could give them like six issues, right? The two prequel, the two Reader's Digest, the prequels, 300, and then the record setter. And instead of just making it an event, you're one and done, boom, boom, out. I was trying to figure out how I could get the retailers to say, oh no, you could buy Spawn, but then here's why you need to buy the next one, and here's why you need to buy the next one and this one, and then this all sort of formulates the world, and then you can go from there. And at the end of 301, the world blew open and all these characters came pouring in, right? Which is now the Spawn universe.
Do you have, are you the kind of creator that has the full Bible with all of the mythology? I'm thinking of the Violator Origin series, was it, that came mm-hmm. out a couple years ago? That was like this wild deep dive into Violator mythology that was awesome. So now, is it all just in your head and you're like, I think there's something about this?
No. I've said it before. If writers saw how I do my issues, they would be horrified. Because I literally sometimes just make it up as I go, right? And part of it is because I know what it's like to draw. So sometimes I'll give half an issue plot to my artist. And if he's on time, then I follow through with what I sort of thought the second half should be. But if something comes up, like his aunt gets, you know, sick, or he's got to go and do something, or he gets a bunion or something, like life gets in the way, and all of a sudden he's like 3 days behind, I alter my plot to make it easy on him or her so that they can get through it, so we can get through the deadline. And so how do you do it? I don't know. I've got some cheats. The biggest cheat of them all, I got a reporter's page. And each one of them has created their reporter page. It's the three heads. Okay, once they've drawn it once, you don't have to ever draw it again, right? So sometimes I save that, and it's like they're going, oh, I'm a little bit behind. I go, don't worry, I'll put a reporter's page in.
Put the reporter's
And you get paid for it. Sometimes I think they intentionally – are late one page every issue. So they go, oh, wow, I get paid for a page. I did this one. I remember with the Jason Alexander, and he was like, oh man, Todd. And it was this big fight in, near the White House. And I go, all right, here we go. Right. And so what happened was I got the good guy and the bad guy together. And the first thing that the bad guy did was he went and he put a dome around the two of them. And then he put out the smoke. And so I go, you're going to have to draw one panel where there's a bunch of little people like sort of trying to press up against the dome. But for the rest of the issue, it's just going to be the two of them beating each other in a smoke-filled room, essentially, which means you don't even have to draw background, let alone the tourist. You don't have to even draw background. And I will just continually to put captions going, and the thousands of people are still straining to try and see the horror that's inside, blah, 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 blah. Now it just becomes writing and you have to paint a picture, right? But we got through the issue and Jason was thankful. And he's like, oh, man, thanks, Todd. So I don't know. This is that part where I run into writers. I just like go, I don't know. I think you guys are a little more rigid than you should be. I think you should be a little more flexible. I never write full script, right? Because I want to see what they draw so that I can write to the expression or the body language or whatever they're doing. And I've said before, as long as you're getting the gist of it, I don't really care the order of it. And I know that might horrify people, but I really don't. If I got a 3-page scene where Alex and Justin are there and
reporters,
and at the end, all I need knowing my next scene is that Justin has to be mad at Alex. That's it. That I need that. That's the move. Mm-hmm. Now to my artist, you can make it so Justin says and does something or physically or verbally, and Alex gets pissed off in the first two panels, and then Alex is mad for all three pages before I go out. Or you can have Alex and Justin having a nice conversation, and then the second to last panel, Justin says something about Alex's mama. And now Alex goes, pardon, what did you just say about my mom? And then, boom, either way, the last panel is that Justin and Alex are not on good terms. That's all I need, because I know what's going to happen later is I need that guy to be solo and he can't call on his buddy because his buddy's pissed off at him. That's it. I don't really sort of care how I get that. I'm not rigid at how I get there. And I'd rather let the artists have fun of going, no, I'm, I'm going to have them happy and then sad instead of sad and then happy. Like, I don't care. And this is an ongoing debate I have with writers. I'm sure they're way smarter than being, like I said, it would horrify them to know that I could be 12 pages into a plot and somebody gun to my head, go, how's this story end? And I go, I don't know. I got eight pages. Don't worry about it. I'll get there.
We have a couple of questions from the comments here I wanted to bring up, if that's all right. This is from The Name Changes. I wish he could have finished the animation. Any chance of returning to it? I assume this is Spawn, the animated series.
Yeah, yeah. So the answer is yes. I've had conversations with Jason Blum and stuff. I don't think that the move after the movie is to go and do live action TV episodic. I think it's to then do what we did and come back with animation, and animation is sort of moved in leaps and bounds since the HBO show. So there's things that we can do now that we couldn't do, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So yeah, to me, once the sort of the small snowball goes down the hill, which is Spawn the movie, and it gains any momentum, again, it has to be successful, it will just begat other things. And one of the first things that we'll be talking about then will be, let's bring back the animation. I think it'll crush. What are you talking about? HBO comes back and says they're bringing back Spawn the animated show. They'll kill. It'll kill. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, every one of their rivals should want it to go, we don't want HBO getting it back.
Yeah. I mean, on the movie, I may have missed something, but the last thing I remember is we saw the front of a script page for King Spawn a year back, maybe something like that. Is there any, obviously it's been a long journey, you've been very careful with it, but is there any progress on that?
The end result, I've had a couple of scripts given to me that I've not signed off on, right? Mm-hmm. Another one even a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, I'm over it. I'm over trying to get others to understand what I think this character needs to be. And I thought one of the scripts went like too far, like ignoring everything. Cause I keep trying to give as much rope to the writer as possible. And the other one that just came in, I thought was way too loyal. Right. And I told them, I go, guys, stop looking at the first 10 issues of Spawn. Right. That's like telling me that I'm a major league baseball player and you're going to study my first 10 at bats in the majors. I promise you they're not my best 10 at bats. Right. Stop it. I was just planting some seeds and I'm now 375 into it. And there's like pieces that are way more meaningful now that like weren't there. And that's maybe some of the stuff you were talking about, Justin, besides visually, what would I do? Some of the stuff that I think works better now, I would have put it in earlier. So like guys, like I keep saying the same thing. If you do a word cloud of Spawn with 100, if not 1,000 people, I think the dark, creepy, cool, badass are the four biggest words in the cloud, yeah. Right? And so I go, just keep that piece with a little bit of horror. And again, there's a guy, Greg Nicotero, very famous, you know, VX guy, but he's now done all the big directing of The Walking Dead and has done his own little movie stuff, but he's a great concept guy too, and a studio recreated these busts. I wish I could show them to you because I remember we designed them and I was like, oh man, Greg. And then he actually made it without telling me, made a 3D version of each one of them and brought me to his hotel. It was New York Comic Con, he was doing something because Walking Dead was in the heyday. But he was like, hey, Todd, we should have breakfast. And I'm like, okay, cool. Let's have breakfast. Great. And he goes, you should have it at my hotel. Well, where's your hotel? And it's like, well, your hotel is like 8 miles away. Mine's like a block and a half from the convention. Aren't you going to the convention? Yeah, okay, well, let's just go to my – no, I think we should eat at my place. Oh, okay, I'll go 8 miles to your hotel, and then we can go back another 8 miles. But okay, great. And then we had some breakfast. And then he's like, I got to go up to my room and get something. I'm like, okay, you go get whatever you got to get. You know, it's like a kid telling you they got to go pee. And then he's like, you coming with me?
No, ruse.
Yeah, this is a trap.
I will just wait here. And like, I think you should come with me. And I'm like, all right, Greg, I will come with you to your room so you can get your stuff. And then
he would have had it planned out a little bit better. The lure to the room.
But no, up to this point, I'm going. I'm completely going for it. And then we go into his room and he opens the door and he stands to the side so I can go in first. And he has unscrewed every light bulb in this room, and he had brought his own lighting, and he brought pedestals, and there were six pedestals, and on each pedestal with this great fucking moody lighting on each one of them were the six designs we came up with of Swamp. And when I I'll never forget. And when I held it, it was like, that's my movie. And I keep giving these busts to my writers going, if you ever have a day where you're in doubt, pull out one of those busts. Cause my plan was to use all of them. And all the different looks. Cause Swan can transform. So I don't think he should look the same all the time. Just pull out one of them and go, whatever I'm writing, does it sort of jibe up to this? That's it. Done. And I don't know why I can't get there. So anyways, I sat with Blumhouse last week and I pitched them an idea that I go, this is it. This is the movie, because I am exhausted. And either I'm writing it or you're finding a writer who will co-write it with me, or we're going to be stuck at the hip. Because I cannot let this. I am done. I'm getting way too old. I am done letting this just be given to somebody and hoping that it turns into what I want. And luckily, you get these moments where things like Obsession come out and Backrooms come out, and you go, see, you don't need all this big extravagant stuff that's in there. I've been telling you guys for 10 years, it just needs to be this dark, creepy, moody thing, and people will go for the fucking ride, right? So anyways, we'll see.
You need to set a hotel room trap for these writers. Get them in there.
Anyways, so where are we at? Still pushing the boulder up the hill, although everybody is still helping me push it, right? So again, nobody's jumped off. Nobody, I'm actually supposed to be going to Jamie Foxx out tomorrow, right? And talk about a couple of things. So nobody's abandoning ship. We just want to make sure that we get the right thing. That's
a miracle in itself to keep a group together like that.
For sure. And when, if the movie happens, would you want Greg Nicotero to direct as well, do you think?
Well, we're talking to a couple directors, but at some point, if I can't find the right people, then he's already created the look. So let's just keep going, right? Let's just keep going.
His Walking Dead episodes are great. They're excellently directed.
You know what, man? Yeah. Okay. But like I said, we're talking to a handful. We're talking to a handful of directors. Yeah. Some of them pretty big. So, I was saying to a couple of the directors, I was like going, hey, like Greg Nicotero helped me create these. Matter of fact, he had a big input in the, like we should all together, like all of this talent, the actors, the producers, all this together, like it should be working. I don't know what's taken so long for this to gel, but Jason Blum, probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I don't know, maybe it was longer than that, said something to me that irritated me. But in hindsight, he was like dead on. And he said, I thought it was taking too long. And that was probably after 5 years. And he said, Todd, here's what I'm going to tell you. a movie will get made when it's ready. And I just want, easy for you to say, because you got 10 you got 10 movies coming out. Like you got, so it's easy for you to be passe about like whatever. But as time's gone by, then he was right in that I could have insisted on some of the stuff that I wasn't comfortable with getting made, whether it was my version or anybody else's version. And maybe it might work, or maybe it might. But if it didn't, we would all be wondering, myself more than anybody else, of going, maybe I should have waited longer, right? So I can live with failure as long as this is like, why do you have Spawn in your life? And I said, like, I need that. It's chicken noodle for my soul in the corner.
Yeah.
Like I can live with failure, and I've had tons of it in my career. I can live with failure if I was part of the decision making of stuff that I own, right? Instead of like giving it away, somebody makes a decision, and then if it works, you kind of go, well, I didn't really have much to do with that. And if it doesn't work, you're going, oh man, I would have done this, right?
Yeah.
So if we do a movie and it ultimately fails, then I actually will be able to sleep, because I go, well, this is what I always thought it should be, and I would guess I was just wrong. My bad, Todd. Right. But I'm hoping not. I'm hoping that, as I tell people in Hollywood, I think I can draw a million fans. Right. Yeah. And usually a million fans don't go by themselves. So let's say they each bring a pal or somebody. That's 2 million at $20 a ticket. That's 40 million. And so I said it to a couple of executives.
That's a good number.
I think the first 40 million is mine. The question is, what are you, Hollywood studio, going to do beyond 40 for me?
They love hearing that.
Because if my experience. No, I think I can go independent and do 40. So help me get to 80. Let's go. And if we can get to 80, then we know that we got a sequel 2 days later, because it's going to economically work, because we're not going to spend a bunch of money. Let's go. And oh, by the way, then all of a sudden there's the animation, and then there are these other projects with some of these other characters. Like, what are you talking about? Gunslinger? Shit. Gunslinger. I'm getting Gunslinger on the screen. I promise you that. Like, he's coming too. So
you make a good pitch, I'll tell you that. I mean, that's solid. Spielberg Disclosure Day did what, like 47, 49?
44. Yeah.
All right. But, and again, it's a good number, but it's interesting that with the budget and his pedigree, it still has half of what Backrooms did.
100%.
Right? That's the piece. And now it'd be interesting, because there's a lot of competition going on right now, right? And you saw it, like Masters of the Universe got knocked down real quick. Why? Because there's Obsession still going strong. You've got Backrooms still going strong. You got Scream came out again. So you got three horror movies there, and Scream came out at 55, right? Mm-hmm. Scary movie. What did I say? Scream. Scary movie. My bad. And then you've got Spielberg's movie, and then you've got some other big ones coming down the pipeline, right? The war drums are starting to beat for the Odyssey, right? Yeah. So here we go. So I don't know, and we're now starting to have conversations potentially like we used to years ago before the pandemic, where it's like, oh man, who's gonna get the air out of their sail knocked out, because there's so many options for us, right?
Yeah,
there was a spell, a dry spell there, where I don't know, where like maybe there was like really four or five go-to movies in 1 year, like you and everything else, you go, I'll go, but you weren't really enthusiastic about it. And now they're starting to, it's starting to feel just a little bit kind of like what it felt like a little bit before the pandemic. Obviously the dollars aren't back, but it's like when I go to theaters now, I'm starting to see more people in the lobby.
Yeah.
Than I
be there
now. Than 3 years ago. Right. And once you get us to be habitual, which is all you ever want from your consumer, to be habitual, what you never want from an addict, which is habitual, is to get them to go straight. And so you never, as you're selling crack, you don't ever want them to fucking go 2 weeks without it. Right. And we went with the pandemic, we like went And we said, you can stay home. Ah, you know what? We'll even bring the movies to you at home. Like we're not even going to put it in theater. We're going to, and you rewired us to go, so we don't have to go. And then, and then all of a sudden the pandemic's over and they're going, nobody's going to the movies. Cause you trained us. You trained us not to go. Oh, and by the way, you took out the middle. You took out the middle movies that a lot of adults would go to that was counter programming to the big superhero sci-fi and then the kiddie horror stuff, right? There, like there was a lot of adult stuff in between.
Yeah.
You stopped making it. So why would my wife and I go to the theater if you're not making movies for us anymore? Right? Yeah. We'll wait for Star Wars. Don't worry about it. So, but anyways, hopefully they've got a little bit of a smile on their face and they'll start to loosen the purse strings and we'll start to get a little bit more of a flood back on good movies that we can go and enjoy.
Just to sort of loop it back to comics, and thank you, by the way, for being so generous with your time. I just wanted to ask you this before we go, since it's been a hot topic of the comic book industry. The speculator market, that's something obviously you were right in the middle of back when it first grew and then popped the first time. People are very worried seeing all the blind bags and variant covers and everything that come out. You get like a little bit of this PTSD coming off of people because of it. Where do you think we're at right now? And how does the comic industry not make those same mistakes again?
The quick, easy answer is I don't know. Name's Todd, only rhymes with God. So I don't have the premonition. But in all honesty, Alex, I'm asking the exact same question almost daily. Hmm. Because I, like I said at the very beginning of this interview, my books are tied to the pulse of this industry. And if this industry wants to implode itself or double in size, I either get to go for the ride or I go down with it. I don't have enough power to do anything with that tide. That tide is just way too strong. So I'm asking the same question because I'm seeing some of the stuff that eventually wore people out in the 90s. And there's, again, we have to be careful of not taking advantage of the consumer, because the consumer is actually pretty good eventually. Not at the beginning, but eventually. We'll see what happens with SpaceX stock. It came out today. It passed Amazon and Microsoft in terms of value. It's now the fourth largest. Well, I guess it died at the end of the day and it went back down. But at one point, it actually had passed those two. So it's the fourth most valuable company on the planet. Now, based on what? Based on like, and so you can go, there's a lot of hype and maybe they'll pull it off. So what's happening with all of it? Here's potentially a caution tape that people should be paying for. You have to have the majority of people going, hey, let's just be mindful. Let's be mindful. But if one of the equations are public companies, right? And that's where Marvel and DC come in. And the other one is either speculators and or stores that are going, man, I can take that book and I can take a book for 50 and flip it for 100. I can do it. Both of these want the same thing. More cash, more cash, more cash, more cash. And that they're both going for the same goal, which is maximize. And the thing I've found that I've seen it over and over, and even like outside of the comic book industry, never, just because you have a cow and it will give you milk, don't milk it dry for no reason. Milk it dry if you have to. I advise you not to, but milk it dry because you're thirsty and you need to feed all the thirsty babies. Then you've got a good reason. But milking for the sake of milking, which is just, we can make money now, let's make money. That's when businesses and companies and industries have historically gotten in trouble. Why? Because they eventually take advantage of the consumer, and the consumer who is buying something at $10 can't sell it for $3 a week later. Eventually they go, you know what? I'll go someplace else and spend my $10 where they're not taking advantage of me. But we also live in a different time with the internet. so you can bring in more speculators and you can get the stories told and whatever else. But I am as curious to that answer as possible. Right now, new people are coming in. My only thing is, if there's going to be new people coming in, can I deliver any quality books that those people are going to buy? They're going to buy more than Absolute Batman. So can I be one of the books, since they're there in the store, they go, I got money, I'm going to buy 10 issues. I hope it's not all the variant covers, maybe, but can I give them some other things that might turn their head? That's on me at that point. But do I do all the things that are kind of working and making cash? No, I don't, because I just don't. I pride myself. It took me 17 years before I raised my price. And the only reason I raised my price, I hate to say it, was somebody put a tariff on it. Yeah. And it just wouldn't work otherwise. Yeah. So I had to. So could I have raised it to $3.99 10 years ago, 12 years? Of course I could have. Would it have been the same price as everybody else? Yeah. Would I have been a bad guy? No. Would I have made more money? Yeah. Why do it, Todd? Other than I would have made more money, why would I do it? That was the question. Like, okay, Todd, to make more money. And who else? And what other value is there other than me making money? And you know what? I've lived a charmed life. My wife and I are happy. We got money. We don't need more of it. We're okay. So what we need are loyal customers.
Yeah.
And the way you keep loyal customers, you treat them fairly. It should be a two-way street. If they're loyal to you, you should be loyal back to them as much as possible. So I don't know. We'll see, Alex. A year from now, 6 months from now, we may have this conversation and maybe a drastically different answer, one direction or the other. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your insight regardless. Yeah. Todd, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for taking the time to talk. All the stuff going on with Spawn and everything else is great. So exciting. We appreciate it so much.
Yeah. Best of luck to you guys, too. You keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Todd. Have a good evening.
See you soon.
All right. Be good.
All right, there we go. Todd McFarlane, you know him, you love him. Check out everything for the Spawn line, Spawn and King Spawn by Matthew Rosenberg. As mentioned, Erica Schultz is now on Gunslinger Spawn. These are great jumping on points for all of these books. You can check them out in comic book stores right now. They're great.
Very good. And by the way, SpaceX is the ultimate blind bag. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, too many variant covers, though. I got to be honest with you. I don't know.
A lot of variants in that SpaceX.
Yes. And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments. It can be about absolutely anything, and we will get to it. While we're waiting for those questions to come in, and I do want to apologize, there are a bunch of folks on here who did ask some great questions for Todd, but obviously we're having a lengthy conversation and couldn't fit them in. So apologies about that. We can answer them, but we won't have the answers. Justin, what are you drinking tonight, if anything?
Just having a little Sierra Nevada Spring Fest IPA. Nice. I'm very seasonal.
Yes.
Just like everyone's allergies.
Yeah. We got a question here from Stanley. Where's Pete? He is off this week dealing with some personal stuff, but hopefully should be back soon. This is from Easy Reader. Did you guys celebrate the Knicks win? Justin?
Yes, I did. You know, I'm not a huge NBA guy, but it was impossible not to get swept up in the Knicks story the last few weeks. I watched game two at a bar. So exciting. The ups and downs, the loss they took. Game four was watched at home with my wife, who has now purchased like 9 Knicks t-shirts. For the Saturday game, she showed up in a jersey. I was like, where'd you get that? She's like, I bought 2. I was like, oh, okay, Brunson, let's do this. But yes, I didn't, our kids got into it as well. So I was going to go out into the streets for game 5, but the kids wanted to watch the games. And I was like, my wife was like, could we take them to a watch party? I was like, imagining what happens right after a win from pure joy to absolute terror, trying to get back home. So, but we had a screen with some other families at our school and partied and watched it. It was so fun.
Oh, that's so nice. The vibes here in New York, for anybody who was in New York, were impeccable pretty much for weeks at this point. The one just talk like my one not negative experience with the Knicks thing, but I think it was the night of when was Trump there? Trump was there for game three, I think.
The game they lost.
Yeah, the one game they lost he was there for. I was at a screening at the AMC 34th Street, and I was just scrolling my phone while I was waiting for the screening. And they were like, hey, they're going to be closing down the entire area around Madison Square Garden. Nobody's going to be able to get out of here after this point. And I was like, oh, no, that's halfway through my screening. How am I going to get out of here? But it all worked out. It was still fun because you could see like the crowds packed in around MSG. They repainted all the subway stops in Knicks colors and put, if anybody's never been to New York, there's like little lights on the posts around the subway. They painted them to look like basketballs as well, which was super adorable.
The vibes are very fun in New York.
Vibes are very fun. And it was just like, even the next day, the next morning, walking around, like everybody had like a little skip in their step. Everybody was really happy on the street.
Everyone was
wonderful.
Happy. Yeah. It was great. Yeah, even if you're not a basketball fan, it was the most exciting. Like, Jalen Brunson is like a superhero character. He's like a down and out Spider-Man style character, except he doesn't quip nearly at all. But he's like, he's such a bulldog and came through and won that final game in historic fashion.
Yeah.
Huge. Just a great story.
Great. Great stuff. And for anybody who was worried, like, there was no violence. There was nothing. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think still not taking your kids on the street, good idea, because people were just packed and going nuts for hours. But people were just having such a great time the entire time. And that's really like, that is New York. And that's what gets my goat when anybody's like, oh, New York's a hellhole where people are going to riot all the time. No, any situation.
New Yorkers are nice.
New Yorkers are nice. New Yorkers stick out for each other. It's a great city. Take that. This is from Nat Towson. What are some alternate spawn forms that you would like to see, e.g. business casual spawn or Hawaiian vacation spawn?
Those are the most natural EGs, I find.
Yes, for sure. Maybe like ice cream man spawn. I'd love to have Spawn hand me an ice cream cone or something.
Yeah. Spawn and King Spawn, two-seated bicycle, obviously.
My first thought was like, oh, like you mean in the Muppet movie, the only place I've seen people ride bicycles before.
Any bicycles? Oh, you should look around.
Yeah, maybe.
What other spawn forms? I mean, I think Todd was talking about sort of the genre power of the spawn, and that's why Gunslinger, I feel like, I believe him when he says he's going to bring that to some sort of screen.
Yeah.
So jumping into, I don't know what that, what the next genre up would be.
Yeah.
Rom-com.
Rom-com. I have serious drama. I was just picturing it like Vision, but he's wearing a suit and he's a spawn and he has a family and it's Thanksgiving and things are hard, you know?
Yeah, things are hard.
This is from Keith Standish. Are you going to add Spawn titles to the stack? Yes, I would love to. We should definitely get caught up with it. We do it ever so occasionally. And I will say for the record, we will probably say this on Week Geek, our Patreon podcast again. But it's too bad Pete wasn't here because he is really the Spawn super fan. I'll usually throw it in for him. Man, this would have put a smile on his face. So we'll see. Schreckler says, what's the greatest length you've ever gone to or would go to for comics?
Wow, pushing the limits. Greatest length to just get comics? That's a tough one, I guess.
Yeah, like what's the furthest you've gone or the most you've done for a comic book? Like, first thing that comes to mind, this isn't a good answer, but Free Comic Book Day every year. We line up for hours at a shop to get free comic books, which I certainly don't need, but my kids want.
Yeah.
So that's a while.
I've certainly traveled. When I'm traveling, I've traveled long distances to get to a comic book shop in a foreign city, and that's fun. When I've told this story before, perhaps, but right after I graduated college, I was on a grant for a year studying political street theater. And so I
how's that working out, by the way? Is that
really good?
Oh, good.
I mean, honestly, you laugh, but it sort of is.
It sort of is, yeah.
But I was gone for like a year. I couldn't come back to the country as part of the grant. And my comic book shop and my dad saved all, they kept my box open, even though I was going to be gone for so long. And every like 2 months, my dad would go buy a obscene stack of comics and just pile them up in my room.
I mean, just far, and again, this wasn't very far or anything, but when I was on vacation a couple of years back in Oslo, we went to Oslo and Copenhagen and up in various places in Norway. Every city we went to, I was like, is there a comic book shop? And the one place I found it was in Oslo, where there was this great Norwegian comic book shop. And I think I got you guys copies of The Walking Dead in Norwegian.
Yeah, in Norwegian, yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Very cool.
Street Bullet says, question for Alex. Was it possible to not get caught up in the Knicks vibe? I mean, I fell asleep before the game was over. I didn't watch it.
Before the game was over.
Yeah, but I enjoyed.
That's definitely not being caught up in it.
Have they done Spawn on the High Seas? Yes, I believe so. Wasn't there Pirate Spawn or something like that?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. Oh, this is a question, I believe, for you, Justin. This is from Stanley. Have you ever had Jim Lee on the show?
We've never had him in person, right?
No.
We've interviewed him at cons a couple times.
Yes.
Just passing. At New York Comic Con, I was with Nat Towson, and we said hello. But, yeah, he doesn't... He's someone, like a lot of people in his spot, who don't really like interviews.
Yeah, I was teeing you up for he's been on your show, specifically.
What?
When you were drunk and called him the King of San Diego. A story we've told many, many times. You were avoiding saying that?
Only because I literally told it the show you weren't here, like, 2 weeks ago.
Okay. All right.
And I can't say it that frequently.
All right, fair enough. That's fine. But I don't think we've interviewed him, definitely. Yeah, like New York Comic Con booth stuff, but never on the podcast.
I would argue that was his show that we were on.
Yes,
when we were in his hotel room being idiots.
Yeah. Great related question. Have you ever done anything like, for example, dedicate your entire life to a comic book podcast? Just once. Just the once.
But like the deal with the devil from Spider-Man, you just have to say it once and it happens.
Yeah. We got a couple of great suggestions here. Space Spawn, Frog Spawn, Spawn Babies. That's a good one. These are all great ideas.
These are all great ideas. But I mean, I think, especially having just spoken to Todd, he seems pretty happy with just doing Spawn.
Yeah, regular Spawn.
Yeah.
And why don't we wrap up with this one? This is from Keith Standish. We're halfway through the year. What have been some of the best comics so far? This great one stuff. Is top of mind because they've been talking about it a bit over the Patreon Discord, but Assorted Crisis Events is pretty great.
Very good.
All of the Absolute Universe stuff is pretty great across the board.
I would throw out W. Maxwell Prince and Martin Morazzo's non-Ice Cream Man stuff has been really standout for me. Their Superman book and now Dead Man. It's very cool.
I'll give a shout-out while we're talking about creators, Kyle Starks. A lot of his stuff has just been absolutely great. Wrestle Heist was a delight. I loved every single issue of that. And there's a couple of horror books. Oh, what was the one that he did about the revenge tale, the woman?
Oh, yes.
I'm forgetting the title of it, but...
It's one of those titles where it's like...
I'm going to kill you if you don't stop.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very Matthew Rosenberg title is the way that
I think exactly. I think Matthew Rosenberg's new book, the first issue's out. First issue was very good. I'm looking forward to the second one, which has got to be coming soon. I had so many other thoughts in my head.
It's hard top of mind, but that's a couple to start with, I think.
Yeah.
And normally we would do trivia at this point, but Pete is not here, so we don't have to. So instead, why don't we talk about what is coming out this week that we're looking forward to coming out tomorrow. Justin, you got any picks there?
Coming out tomorrow. Yes. There is a book coming out that it was such a pleasure to just see that there's a new Concrete coming.
Yes.
So excited for that. This is a book that we're talking about in our Comic Book Club book club, which is now, I think we're doing that next month, right? Or late this month?
Later this month. We had to shift it because a couple of people, among other things, had Nick's hangovers.
Yeah.
So, which is fair.
I had that, but I was ready to talk. Okay. Concrete Stars Over Sand, number one, comes out tomorrow. Paul Chadwick, just absolute great book. If you haven't read it, go back and read any of the volumes. They are sort of sequential. Like, you want to read them in order because there's a progression, I would just say. So very much looking forward to that. I'll also give it up for If Destruction Be Our Lot, number two, like I just said. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a good one, I'm certain. And I mean, Redcoat number 18. I feel like I go to bat for this book a lot. And it's good. We're in the middle of a sort of circling back to the beginning characters arc with Fan facing his mortality after he settled down.
I'm looking forward to Amazing Spider-Man number 31. Marvel has been hyping this up as the talk, with some big revelations coming from Aunt May. Curious to see how they handle that. Also, I'll give a shout out to Odin number 2. The first issue of that from Image Comics was extremely messed up, with a bunch of Nazis going into the snowy Norse wilderness and not buying comics, but doing some absolutely awful things. And then what else? Oh, did you mention Of the Earth number 2?
I didn't, but that was gets Chris Condon's book, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's he talked about that on the show a little bit. He was like, he described it as a roller coaster ride where the first issue is like creak, 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 creak to the top, yeah, and then it's just downhill after that. So excited to see what they do in issue number 2.
And let me say that is the first issue, like, has that horror setup that, like, we were talking about with Todd with movie. Like, it feels very horror movie, mm-hmm, in a way that's really good. I would also shout out Absolute Green Arrow number 2. I love the first issue of this comic by Pornsack Pinochet. And it's really just intense, very topical. The bad guys seem very bad, especially because they are easily mapped on people that are in the news right now.
Yeah. And all those books and many more are going to be in our Stack podcast that posts Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Thank you so much to our great guest, Todd McFarlane, for coming on. Check out everything from the Spawn universe and everything else he does. Next week, we're going to have another legend on the show. Billy West is going to be here.
Yeah.
If you don't know who that is, that's the voice of Stimpy, the voice of Doug Funny Fry on Futurama. He has a new book called Voice Averse, Finding My Voices Behind the Mic. That'll be here to talk about that. So that should be pretty awesome.
I'm so psyched for that.
Me too.
Crazy.
I just confirmed that earlier today, and I was like, can't wait to tell everybody on the show. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, coming out Monday through Friday. Check that out. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We taped a special episode with Pete talking about The Punisher. So that should be coming out soon. That's my bad for not putting it up yet. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Comic Book Club on Blue Sky. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night, everybody.